Heart has a brand new way to wake up.
Gee, I can't remember the first interview I did with my next guest on the issue of thylacines, the now elusive and of course officially extinct Tasmanian tiger. His name is Neil Waters, and he founded a group called the Thylacine Awareness Group of Australia. And since then, I've had sightings, alleged sightings from Wilson's Promontory in Victoria. There's been a couple in South Australia, and the evidence from any number of people that I've spoken to, and I genuinely mean any number. I won't name them, but people who've come up to me confidentially and said, "Mate, they're there, and we don't want anybody to know about it." So there's almost a cone of silence on the issue of the thylacine here in Tassie that I found more than a little intriguing. So it was announced a couple of days ago that the aforementioned Neil Waters has found, apparently, or taken a photograph of a family of thylacine. The photo has been sent off to Nick Mooney from UTAS, a bit of an expert in this area, who's commissioned a report saying that the photograph is almost certainly, in his view, of a pademelon, which are very common species of wallaby around all over Tasmania. You'd be very familiar with them. So he has a photo that he's not published. He's sitting opposite me in the studio now. G'day, mate. How are you going?
I'm going good. Thanks, Brian. How are you,
mate? Good to see you. We'll meet you finally. We've had God knows how many conversations, but this is our first face-to-face. Okay, the photo you're about to show me and I haven't seen yet is sitting on your laptop.
Correct.
Okay, can I just get Shelby? Shelby, can you go over there and grab that laptop? Now, this is how secret this is. They're all photos, I understand, are watermarked.
These ones aren't.
Okay,
I'm showing you the photos directly off the SD card, actually.
Okay, all right.
The honest way to do it, I suppose.
Okay, and just while I'm looking at the photo, if you can just talk me through how you managed to take the photo and without revealing exactly where.
Sure.
Precisely, what am I looking at here?
All right, so for starters, about 18 months ago, I decided to – we actually wanted to become a charity so we could raise money to fund the research that I'm doing.
Right.
Government didn't want us to become a charity because they say the animal's extinct, fair enough. So we became an incorporated association. So as part of that process, we decided we'd have paid membership and I'd come up with the idea of sponsoring a trail camera. So that gave us a little bit of money in our kitty. So that would pay for fuel, SD cards, the cost of the trail camera, and batteries.
All right.
So that's been very successful. We have now got well over 60 trail cameras sponsored. So we now have to import more trail cameras, which is very exciting because there's a lot of support out there for what we do. So every 3 or 4 months I go out, pick up the trail cameras, change the SD cards, bring them in if they've been chewed on by a devil or a quoll, and they do get attacked by nature. They get water in them, all sorts of things go wrong.
Yep.
Occasionally, they reset to factory settings, which is what's happened to this card on this camera. If you have a look, it says the date at the bottom of the photo is the first of 2016.
Yep.
Now, sometime in November, and I can prove it by scrolling through the card, but we won't worry about that now. But it decided to reset to factory settings in November. But that was like 350 photos before that photo that you're looking at now.
Okay, so what am I looking at?
Well, I believe you're looking at a juvenile thylacine for a number of reasons. Number one, the colour of the animal is a fawn colour. Number two, it's got stripes. Number three, it's got a straight tail that looks like a continuation of its spine, and its back is dead straight while it's down on all fours.
So it just doesn't look like a pademelon that's sort of slightly crouching, leaning forward a little bit.
Well, they've got a very fat bottom.
They do tend to have a fat bottom.
They have a very broad bottom. Now, if you have a look down the line of that photo, you can see it's a nice, even, straight width, and the ear that you can see is almost in line with the ribs. That means it's got a broad head. Pademelons have got a narrow
skinny
little head.
Well, that's true. So they do have a skinny little head.
Now,
okay.
I'm not a scientist. I'm not an expert. And I'm certainly not a photoshopper because I can't even use photo proof or whatever.
I can tell. I'm just scrolling through some of your pics here. No, I'm kidding. One of the problems here that to my way of thinking.
Sure.
If they do exist in the state, how come they just don't turn up as roadkill every now and again?
Because there are so many things in Tasmania that eat roadkill, including devils. Now, devil numbers are definitely increasing up north because we used to get one or two devils. Now we get devils on just about every camera we put out. And that's covering that, a really large area.
I mean,
it's excellent. Yeah. And we haven't seen one with facial tumour either, which is even better.
Fabulous.
So there are a lot of predators out there, a lot of scavengers. There are a billion ravens flying around now, cleaning up, filling in the gap that the
devils... Wouldn't we find skeletal remains then somewhere?
You'd hope so. But honestly, Brian, things get cleaned up very quick by nature, especially in summer. In winter, they last a bit longer. But in summer, in the heat, when there's so many flies and extra insect activity, things disappear really quick, really quick.
Okay. Well, one of the concerns that I've had expressed by any number of and I'll call them bushies,
sure, right?
Tasmanian bushies, who spend a lot of time out in the scrub. They're either hunters or itinerant walkers, people who just love walking around for kilometre after kilometre in the bush. And that they say to me, look, we know they're there, but we're worried about what might happen if anybody finds them. So there's is it possible that if we did discover that there were some live specimens of thylacine that they would be loved into actual extinction?
I don't think they could be loved into extinction. I think
because everybody want to see them, wouldn't we? We'd want to go there. We'd want to see them in their natural habitat. There'd be pressure to pull them out of the wild and put them in zoos.
Well, I think that would be the worst case scenario, wouldn't it? I mean, how successful were they in zoos?
Neil, this is exactly what I'm asking you.
Yeah.
Is there even if we were to find incontrovertible evidence that the thylacine's still out there, that it sure would be buried for that reason?
Yeah.
Well, I think, I've heard that allegation made.
Yeah, that allegation's been made several times. I think the real issue is, do we have passive-aggressive conservation by pretending it's not there and still do things a little bit inconsiderate of the possibility that may be there, like, you know, using 1080 baits, for example.
Yeah.
Now, I know STT don't use 1080 anymore and Foraco don't use 1080, but I do believe that private landholders are still able to access it and use it. And quite frankly, it's toxic crap. It kills everything indiscriminately, and it's very persistent in the environment. The off-target damage is horrendous for predators.
Okay.
Eagles, all sorts of things. Yeah,
the less of that stuff we've got out there.
If we can subsidise forestries to support forestries and people's livelihoods, why can't we subsidise farming and give them better options for fencing and control of herbivores that are destroying their crops rather than just throwing 1080 everywhere?
If they are out there, and again, I'm just speculating, is that the biggest threat to them, or is there some other threat that's bigger?
Well, look, forestries is always a hot potato in Tassie. At the end of the day, we need timber and we need minerals out of the ground. We need these resources. How we do that needs to be at the world's best standard. I'm not a forestry expert, by no means, but everyone's upset, I think, pretty much by old growth logging. But the government here still want to log old growth. They still try and get away with it. They were caught with a coup the other week that I saw in the paper that was, you know, clearly had some massive old trees in it and it was ready to be logged. So
yeah, there's lots of pressure there to stop all that, no doubt.
We've got to meet our quotas, obviously, but we've just got to do it to the best of our capacity. And yeah, I think the only major threat to this animal at the moment, if it's still persisting, which I believe it is 1080. Always there's going to be the odd rogue trophy hunter, but by far and large, 90%, 95% of all the hunters and shooters I have met are extremely responsible with their attitude towards hunting. Most of them are out there to get a feed, or they're doing a quota for a farmer because he's got a problem with possums or whatever in their orchard, that sort of thing, you know. Like, they're responsible people.
Okay. How many do you think there are? Because, look, the number of locations that I've heard reports of tigers being spotted in, allegedly, is pretty much across the northern half of the state.
Yeah.
Given that their lifespan in the wild is, as an adult, is about 10 years, about a decade or thereabouts, they've got to have been there for the better part of the last century, right?
Yeah.
Undetected, unknown, believed extinct.
Unfound, unproven, many times. That's what sightings are.
Well, yes, that is. But what I'm saying is, surely in that period of time, nearly a century now, that we would have found more hard evidence than what we've got.
Okay, well, we shot out or trapped or used for the fur trade over 2,000 of them. The population was obviously very low at the end of 1936 when the last one in captivity died. What you were left with was all the ones that were smart enough not to get caught as your gene pool. They've regrouped. 80 years later, 83 years later, whatever it is, I think you've probably got – it's fair to say there would be hundreds out there. I'm not an expert, I don't know, but based on sightings alone that I know of, they're all over the mainland in every state. They're all over Tassie, but they just get seen occasionally. They don't get seen all the time. They've managed to survive with all of the rape and pillage that's happened through the guns era, the ridiculous 1080 fox baiting program that we had for $50 million down the toilet.
I've spent a fair bit of time talking about that.
We don't want to go down the fox baiting hole.
I'll do that again.
But at the end of the day, they've managed to survive through a whole heap of turbulent times and alteration of their environment. They're adaptable, obviously.
Okay,
but what threats do we stop? You know?
What would you do if you found a live one?
Well, I certainly wouldn't put it in a cage or take it to a scientist to cut up on
who
a slab.
Who would you call? I'm not talking Ghostbusters, but who would you call?
I'd film it and make sure that it was safe and let it go, and then I'd take it to the museum and say, well, now you have to do something. Come on, let's catch up. Why does it take privateers like me using my own money? I've given away my career to come back down here to actually try and prove this because I'm sick of all the speculation and bickering and ridiculousness and science sitting on their hands.
And I get a funny feeling there's a significant number of people in the state who don't want you to prove it.
Absolutely. And they tell me that regularly, but I still stand up to them and say, look, I get what you're saying, but we can't pretend it's not there and protect it.
Okay. Neil, the photograph is interesting. The stripes may be dappling from the light coming through nearby trees. Is that a possibility you've considered?
I have considered that, but if you have a look at the wide band going over its rear, it actually goes right around the curve of its back.
So now, into what would be the shadow area?
No, it's into what I would call being a stripe going right around the back of the spine. Now, if you have a look at historical photos of them, they have a wider band just above their hips.
Yeah, that's true.
The stripes get wider just above their hips. And that's where that band is, mate, right there. The other thing about that photo that I want to point out is the coarse hair and the hocks, the back feet. You can see the back feet in that photo. And I've had a cat expert, I've had a dog expert, and I've had five vets look at that photo, and they've all told me that that has not got the anatomy of a dog or a cat.
Okay.
So we can rule those two out straight away. We're left with Paddy Mellon, thanks to Nick Mooney. That's an excellent choice for his decision. I appreciate his decision. And we are going to now test that photo against baby Paddy Mellons and compare them and just see how different they look.
All right, we better catch up once you've done that and have got some more to say. It's a great pleasure to meet you. I love your passion. You've clearly got a passion for this. There are lots of people who are concerned about the possibility of you actually finding the thylacine and what might happen as a result. But we'll watch this play out with some interest, as I have been for many, many years now. Neil, it's good to meet you finally. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Brian. And look, I just want to say before I go to all those people that are worried about the animal, we don't want to see it in a zoo and we don't want to see it on a trophy hunter's shelf. And we're going to do everything we can to get this animal protected properly.
Neil Waters is the founder and president of the Thylacine Awareness Group. And, well, some food for thought.
Live from Hobart, 6 a.m. weekdays, Brian Carlton, the Spoon Man, on 107.3 Triple M.